Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head-on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening to Breaking the Silence. I'm Greg Williams. I am actually looking over the beautiful skyline of the Texas Medical Center, looking out over here, and I can see Texas Children's Hospital and Baylor College of Medicine, where I work, and the Methodist Hospital. And there's, I don't know how many hospitals are right outside my window from the 19th floor looking down. Then I look over to the right, and I see the skyline of the most beautiful city in the country, Houston, Texas. Welcome to Breaking the Silence, and we are live tonight for the next hour, and we're here every week, and we just, I thoroughly enjoy our program, and to be honest with you, we get some of the best, most educated, the people that get into the trenches and work with some of the best offices and roles and schools, and the knowledge that the guests we have on each Sunday night is just phenomenal. Tonight is no exception to that rule. Next week, on December 22nd at 8 p.m. Central Time, we're going to have Sue Fort White for the entire hour. Sue is one of the individuals that joined us a few nights ago on the live worldcast that we have, the video program called Hope for the Holidays, and Sue's going to be with us. She does a wonderful program, and she has a website that is awesome. You can actually get on sometime this week just to kind of give you a prelude of what she's going to be talking about next week. It's called whatifitoldyou.com. And that beautiful video that's on that website is phenomenal. As a matter of fact, that video had been playing, I think this past week, on Broadway in New York City, right across on all these huge jumbotrons. And we're going to talk about that next week in her work in Nashville, Tennessee. It'll be awesome. Speaking of Hope for the Holidays, we have that out on YouTube. We have that out on my shatteredbythedarkness.com webpage. Curtis has posted that for us to be able to watch and see over and over again. And if you're interested in that free PDF book that I threw together that had some of the information that we shared that night, plus a lot others, a lot of other information that you can share with your friends, family, people that may need it, on how to deal with the anxiety and the stress of the Christmas season and the holiday season. And sometimes these seasons are kind of tough to get through if it reminds you of some not so great days. And feel free to get on Shattered by the Darkness and email me and just text me, or all my contact information's out there. Just please let me know. I've been sending that out to literally hundreds of people all week long. So I would love to send that out free of charge to you. Also, we're going to be giving away a couple books in the next few weeks. My new book that is called Overcoming the Darkness is going to come out in a few months. The Roadmap to Hope, Overcoming the Darkness, the Roadmap for Hope. All you have to do is get on the Facebook, Shattered by the Darkness account, like or share or friend me or something. I don't know how that works, but my son Curtis takes care of all that. But that will get you in the contest. And then you can also get on the Instagram at Shattered by the Darkness, and that'll get you in the contest, and we'll give away two or three more books in the next few weeks. So that book's going to be very, very exciting. If you want to get in on the conversation tonight, if you have a comment or questions, would love to have you join us. And that is 888-627-6008. And before we get into the program tonight, I want to wish my son, my youngest son, happy birthday. His birthday was yesterday, so happy birthday, Curtis. Love you dearly, and hope you're taking care of that new grandbaby of mine, Karina. So I hope she's sleeping through the night and letting you and Melissa have long nights of sleep also. But if not, welcome to parenthood. You know, I tell you what, the reason for this show, and a lot of people get this confused of why we even do this, so I want to just be clear. The reason and the purpose of this show is to give you a few tips, a few gems, nuggets of gold of information that can help you deal with whatever has happened bad in your life. And if you have a story that you'd like to share, if you have a moment that you want to break your silence that you never have told anybody, you can contact me, and I would love to hear that story. But the first sentence in the next book that's coming out goes something like this. The first sentence in the book: could it be that the worst painful traumatic event in your life could be the very key of the purpose that you have for the rest of your life? If you take the worst possible traumatic event and turn the most negative thing that has ever happened to you into a positive event to be able to help one more person, could it be that is your purpose for the rest of your life? As surely as I'm sitting here on my couch on the 19th floor here in Houston, Texas, the rest of my life is to be able to try to help one more person through a traumatic event in theirs. And tonight we have a couple that has spent, I believe, over the last 25 years doing just that. And it's Dorothy and Steve Haley, and they have bio information on them that is so long that if I started reading that, we wouldn't even get to talk to them. But they do some great work with battered women, battered juveniles, prisoners, and others for decades, and they have a system of helping people to find a way out of toxic shame, blame, and pain, and their work is just phenomenal. We're going to talk about the model called the River of Cruelty model, explaining how that helps to break all of that up. But I just want to welcome from Kansas, Dorothy and Steve Haley tonight. Dorothy and Steve, are you there?
Yes, sir. We're here. We just took a break from shoveling snow to visit with you tonight.
Oh, shoveling snow. Well, welcome. I tell you what, I moved from the St. Louis area and Missouri to Houston, so I wouldn't have to do that anymore. I don't miss that a bit. So you're getting hammered pretty good right now, huh?
About 6-7 inches of snow out there, and more supposed to be coming.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, welcome to the program. I hope you can hear me okay. Dorothy, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you for being here with us tonight, and just welcome to the program. We're just going to sit back and relax, and I have been honored tonight to have you with us this evening, so welcome.
Great to be here. Thank you so much, Greg, for the invitation.
Yeah, well, quite an honor for us to be able to be here with you.
Well, I tell you, you come highly, highly recommended from a dear friend of mine, Carrie, with Aces Connection. And acesconnection.com, matter of fact, is a wonderful place that everybody should get on and look and dig and research. But tell me, Dorothy and Steve, in your own words, what y'all do, how you met, What has the last 25 years of professional life together done for you, and what it's done for so many people? Just kind of give us the nutshell version of what you all do in life.
Well, basically, we are co-founders of the Family Peace Initiative, which is a program that offers a community battery intervention program. It also has an extensive program with working with incarcerated women in the Kansas women's prison. And we also work with detained juveniles in the detention center here in Topeka. And we also have a program going with our alternative school here locally that keeps us very busy.
Okay, so you're located in Topeka, Kansas.
We're here in Topeka. Dorothy and I met 26 years ago or so at the University of Kansas. We were both going to get our social work master's degree. And Dorothy at one point was giving a presentation about domestic violence to the class. And I hadn't really noticed Dorothy up to that moment. But as she was giving this presentation, I knew nothing about domestic violence. I was a probation officer, and I was getting my social work degree, getting ready to move to Oregon after I graduated. And as I was listening to Dorothy give this presentation, I suddenly became the most captivated individual about domestic violence, I think, on the planet. I was going to learn everything about that issue because Dorothy just struck me as the most beautiful person I'd ever seen in my life. And it took getting to know a little bit about domestic violence. I was all in because somehow I was captivated from the point of that presentation, and the rest is kind of history.
So, Dorothy, tell me what you and Steve do with domestic violence, and how prevalent is domestic violence. Just I don't think we've had a program on that since I've started this Breaking the Silence radio program. So, kind of just give us the background of how much of a problem that is, not only in the Topeka area but all over the country.
Domestic violence is something that happens behind closed doors.
Yeah.
So I think there's always a question of, does the research even really cover what all is occurring? But we do know that there are just thousands and thousands of women who are seriously harmed by their partner. We know that there are some men, and there are different stats provided. But I think a lot of stats are as much as one woman in two will be a victim of domestic violence in her lifetime. So it is, unfortunately, way too common. I can tell you that I started as the executive director of a domestic violence shelter back in the mid-80s. And at that time, there really wasn't a lot known about domestic violence, except that it was creating a lot of danger and a lot of havoc in the family.
Right.
But back then, a lot of the focus was on women. It was on why do they stay, and I got frustrated with all of the questions about why do women stay in abuse, when all of the research was showing that actually it is when they get out that they are in more danger than if they stay in, which is really unfortunate because they're in a catch-22.
Yeah.
It was when I was running the shelter program that I had a young lady come in, and she was the seventh victim of the same domestic violence offender in 5 years.
Wow.
And really, when Tina walked into my office, that's when I realized I needed to make some changes in what all I was doing. Because up till then, I continued to be very focused on working specifically with the victims and the children. I thought those who were doing the abuse needed to be locked up and the key thrown away. But of course, I was realizing that wasn't happening. We had right at 90% of those who were coming into the shelter relocating on their own away from the abuser. So I was really pleased with our success until I started realizing that for every woman that we got away from the abuser, that also meant that there was probably going to be another victim, with dragging her children into it. So with Tina walking into my office, I decided I needed to learn more about those who do this violence, because mm-hmm. we're not going to get it stopped by focusing solely on the victim. We need to continue to protect the victim, but in order to get the violence to stop, we have to stop the violent offender.
Okay.
And so my focus then really became on understanding the motives of those who batter. And I soon realized by talking with the victims that actually some of them have quite different motives. And although there's been a lot of focus on those who batter who are entitlement-based, what I realized is that there are many who are extremely desperate. If she walks out the door, they believe that their life is over, which really makes the whole situation very dangerous. And that really prompted us to start looking at what happens to those who batter who are desperate like that. What happened to them long before they ever got in this relationship? And so Steve and I have been working on that, and that's where the trauma work with those who batter really kind of evolved.
So you not only take care of those that are battered, but you're trying to get inside of the head of the why those that are the ones that do the battering, what's caused them to do that? That's fascinating. So what do you think, is this a generational passing on of this type of thing? Or is it something that happened to them traumatically in their life? Or what have you seen over the years in your experience of what causes them to become someone that hurts someone that they're supposed to love? What do you think the key is to that? What's some of the things that's going on inside of their head that you have discovered?
You know, if I can chime in with that, you know, there's a lot of intersectionality going on. You know, so if you want to look for a single cause of domestic violence, it will probably be quite a challenge.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we look at trying to help people heal and help people to move away from cruelty, there's some strategies that we've developed that help people to make changes. As early on in our work, we really focused on kind of the standard procedures for helping people in domestic violence change. There's a lot of cognitive behavioral strategies going on. But as Dorothy started her work with the types of battering typology, we started recognizing that many of those who batter have come from a great history of cruelty long before they were ever cruel to anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so we started recognizing that there was a real important need to pay attention to that and apply some skills addressing those issues while we were trying to intervene with their current day behavior.
Yeah. Now that's what... Go ahead, Dorothy.
Go ahead, Greg.
No, go ahead. You're fine, Dorothy. You jumped in.
Oh, I was just going to say, and that's how we finally evolved that work to the river of cruelty.
Yeah.
What we've been able to kind of recognize is that almost all cruelty that people use in relationships is connected to unresolved cruelty from a person's history.
Wow.
And as people start healing the cruelty that happened to them, they become less or more safe to the members of their own household. And so built in there.
Yeah. Well, what we're going to do, we're going to dig into that because I really, really, really want to dig deep into that. And we're going to do that right on the other side of this break. So Don's going to run a short break for us, about 1:08. We'll be right back with Breaking the Silence. And we're going to find out the motives and the strategies of what's going on inside as we dig into deeper of this domestic violence and these wonderful guests tonight. Stay with us while we have this commercial break.
HCI Publishing that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and The Chicken Soup for the Soul series comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Okay, we try to take a couple commercial breaks because once this goes into podcast next week, the podcast world in needs and wants and is always asking for it to be broken up in chunks. So we take every 20 minutes we take a commercial break. I'm not trying to sell you a book every time we turn around, but we have that little break so the podcast world can plug those in the right way. So we're with Dorothy and Steve Haley from the Topeka, Kansas area, and they're experiencing one dandy snowstorm up there. But they have a wonderful program and so much work with domestic violence and prisoners and youth and so many things. But we're right in the middle of a discussion. I would like for – let's dig a little bit deeper. I really want to find out more about how you work with these – folks that batter. Is it a both side thing? Is it always the men that batters the women? Have you seen the other flip side of that? The women batter the men?
Yeah, Greg, everybody is capable of battering and everybody is capable of using cruelty in relationships.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of battering is done from male to female. But there is significant battering in gay relationships and lesbian relationships. I mean, cruelty exists, but by far the bulk of the battering is men being violent towards women.
Right. Okay, so keep on. Let's keep on this discussion and go a little deeper with how you try to help them. And if somebody is in a situation where they're being battered right now, I want to also go into that. How do they get help? How do they try to protect themselves and the wisdom that
That's
you
right.
have? But yeah. So what kind of work did you do with the ones that are doing the battering? Because I'm amazed with that concept. I could always see, hey, helping the person that's being hurt. But you're trying to get inside and break the cycle, right?
That's correct, and we think that we're being very successful with that. The research that we've been able to do in house has shown us that many people can change and stop using violence and cruelty and abuse in relationships. But it takes kind of a teamwork of, you know, court systems and a system of accountability to be able to create a space where people can be willing to look at themselves. You know, I've appreciated, Greg, the way you have been promoting the adverse childhood experiences study. It's such a critical thing for people to understand. And we start there. That is the beginning of our work and what we call kind of a jumping off point. And several years ago, we administered about 200 of these questionnaires to mostly people in our program and then one other program in Kansas City. And basically, the average ACEs score for people, there was a little over 200 of these, was somewhere between 4 and 5 out of 10.
Okay.
And so it was very unusual for someone to report that they had 0, and very small slice had a 1 or a 2. There was, you know, it was significant. And so we decided that we had to include approaches to be able to address that, the impact of that cruelty, while we were working on the specifics of domestic violence. And so we built a system where what we call using an internal-focused dialogue.
Internal-focused dialogue, okay.
An internal-focused dialogue where every week when we are working with whoever, we're creating a space where people can get, you know, what Bessel van der Kolk talks about, the cover story. You know, we're working to help people move past the cover story and be more authentic about not only what happened to them, but also what they have done in relation to others. And it's a process of creating safety. It's a process of creating a space where people can take risks, take kind of emotional, risky steps, and start looking at themselves in a little bit more genuine way. Our facilitators lead everything by example, and so anything that we ask our participants to do in our classes, our facilitators are doing first. And so we lead by example. We're challenging people to look at themselves more in more depth, and we're pursuing what we call a trauma-focused, energy. And we're looking for what happened to you long before you ever did anything to somebody else. And it's an amazing process. You know, when people get past their cover stories, as you are a testament to, you know, they start sharing things that it can be mind-boggling and difficult to imagine that those stories are hidden just under the surface of people's cover stories.
Yeah. Now, I'm amazed with – I'm writing down as fast as I can write, and that's what I love about this show is we learn stuff, and I'm just sitting here going, wow. Trauma-focused energy. So you said ACEs is kind of where you start off. So when the folks come in, do you give the adverse childhood experience test to them right away to find out where they fall into that?
It is something that is built into our curriculum that we use, and it really depends on when people enter our program, when they would, go through that questionnaire.
Okay.
But we're dealing with trauma-focused conversations every week.
Okay, so with that, from a common listener that's just sitting at home and came across the show tonight, and they don't know exactly what all the trauma and the ACEs, when you get a score of 4 or 5, you've had significant trauma in your life. That's a pretty high score. I think I have an 8 on that scale. But when you get up to that 4 or 5, you have several different traumatic things that's happened in your life that affects the way you look at life. So are we saying, and I don't think that's what you're saying, but when people say, oh, sometimes the badder people are just bad people and they can't control their anger, it's more than that. Explain that. What actually is the motives behind what's going on. They just can't handle what's happened to them as a child, or they've gone through something that, and they're just acting out on the person that they supposedly love.
You are asking some wonderful questions, Greg. First off, we want to make it clear that never is whatever happened to them an excuse for
Beautiful.
Being violent to others.
Beautiful.
And actually, for many years, there was a lot of resistance throughout the movement and throughout the batter's intervention work. There was a lot of resistance, and I had some resistance initially to be looking at their childhood experiences, because what we don't want to do is collude with them and just give them an excuse.
Right.
But the way we do it is different than that. You and I and people who do not choose to be violent to someone else, we kind of have our own choice as to how much we want to into our past. But the way we see it is, if someone has taken action to the point of being violent toward their partner, then they have a responsibility to dig into that path and figure it out so they don't continue doing it. So really, they've got two responsibilities. One is to hold themselves accountable for all of the violence that they have done to others. And secondly, they have the responsibility to sort out what happened to them so that they don't continue that violent behavior.
Do you see in your work over the years, and so many years, and so much impact that you guys are just champions in this, have you seen that the women that are battered have been battered by their parents, and they tend to gravitate towards those type of relationships? Do you see any commonality in that at all?
I think that there has been some research that shows that people who were victimized as children or grew up in violent homes, that they have a greater risk. However, what we know is that the violence that victims experience is not their fault.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's interesting, because the focus so often becomes on why did they get into it and why do they stay?
Right.
And those are things that we really don't get very far in resolving matters when we're going in that direction. Mm-hmm. It is, why does someone hit and get by with it and be allowed to continue violent behavior? It is when we start addressing that we can work toward achieving nonviolence.
Awesome. Okay, let's jump into this river of cruelty model. Explain that to me and what that means and what that has done for you in your work. River of cruelty.
Greg, I started reading the writings of Alice Miller, who really jarred me. She wrote on cruelty and was talking about how cruelty gets passed from generation to generation and person to person. And that was my first epiphany, that domestic violence is just another form of cruelty. That, you know, calling it domestic violence is softening a little bit. It's just a cruel behavior. And so the way we illustrate the river of cruelty is, we have six boxes. And these boxes represent, the first box is the cruelty that people experience growing up. Right. And the cruelty goes way beyond the ACEs questionnaire. I I score very low on the questionnaire myself, but it doesn't take into account a lot of different experiences I had in my life that were very traumatic and disturbing to me.
Yes.
That played out in my life. And so there's a long list of cruel experiences that people can have, and we usually start from before the age of 18.
Okay.
But cruelty, the second box, is what we call the adverse feelings. And cruelty always creates adverse feelings, the feelings that we wake up in the morning hoping that we don't have to ever feel. And
right.
If we are going to feel them, we have a plan of how we're going to get away from them. And so it could be that those adverse feelings would include sadness and fear and feeling small or broken or helpless or hopeless, on and on and on and on and on. Cruelty always creates those adverse feelings. But for many people, they have a support system around them that helps them learn how to process those feelings, to validate those feelings, to normalize them and to work through them to where they can kind of go, well, you know, those are just normal human experience. If somebody is cruel to you, then you have those feelings, and then you're going to have to process them and work through them. But in most cruel households, when the cruelty is going on, there isn't a space where those feelings can be processed through.
Right.
And so when someone, for myself, I grew up in a household of very bright, academic, brilliant people, and I struggled with ADHD. I was a basketball player, and I couldn't find my homework to turn it in. So I struggled with this feeling just stupid and irrelevant and really a disappointment to my family because I couldn't make the grades, which was the standard in our house.
Right, right.
And so what we do is we move to the third box, which is now we have to create defense systems.
Yeah.
If we can't just process through the feelings, we have to find a way to protect ourselves from them. And so we would do lots of things. You know, commonly people drink, they use drugs, they're workaholics, they maybe they're come up with a great comedian personality, or they isolate, withdraw. Some people use violence in order to try to control every situation so they'll never be out of control again. There's
right.
all kinds of possible defense systems. What I used, especially in my younger years, was I got very arrogant about my basketball abilities. And I wanted to tell everybody about how many points I could score in a game, which somehow seemed to compensate for my feeling inadequate with my academic performance, right?
Right.
And so these defense systems are designed to just protect us from feeling the adverse feelings. That's it. And so, but they come with the fourth box, which becomes the unintended consequences. And so these unintended consequences are the products of our defense systems, but we live with them because our defense systems are helping us to feel something that we never wanted to feel again. Right? And so unintended consequences could be getting a DUI or getting a criminal record or running up an enormous credit card bill or having broken relationships or seeing our kids every other Wednesday and on the weekends, right? You know, all these things. For me, I was having trouble making friends because no one liked hanging around with someone who was just very arrogant and conceited and cocky about basketball.
Right? Yeah.
And so people tended to just leave me alone, which was kind of the opposite of what I was trying to achieve. But I couldn't let that go because I didn't want to feel that inadequate and stupid. But it kind of created the very thing that I was most afraid of, but I couldn't understand that. And so the fifth box of that in the river of cruelty, when you have these, you have the cruelty, the adverse feelings, the defense systems, the unintended consequences, and then we have the attitudes and beliefs that kind of support the whole thing. It's the glue that holds this thing together. And so one of my beliefs was that I couldn't let anyone know how inadequate I felt. I couldn't tell anybody how afraid I was of feeling stupid and incapable. And so I had to hide that. And so one of my defense systems, by the way, is to try to what we call pass the football, which is if I don't want to feel stupid, I will go out of my way to make somebody else feel stupid, to make my partner feel stupid, my kids feel stupid, my colleagues, my coworkers. And so I would hand off my adverse feelings to other people, which we would argue a great deal of domestic violence is driven by that very behavior.
I can see that.
So we have these, we have these beliefs that, you know, would support all this stuff and hold this together. And then the sixth box is what we call the painful shift. And the painful shift is recognizing our defense systems and then being willing to explore what is the adverse feeling that that defense system is protecting. And that's where the rubber meets the road and change starts happening, because once I'm no longer afraid or less afraid of my adverse feelings, then my defense systems are unnecessary. And once they're unnecessary, if my defense system is using cruelty in my household, once I'm no longer afraid of myself, I don't have to pass that cruelty on to others. And that's the road to safety for the people that we work with.
Wow, those are absolutely awesome, awesome boxes. And that's called the River of Cruelty model. And you guys developed that?
Yeah, we built that with the help of, you know, we've been diving into adverse feelings for years, and the work of Alice Miller and others was just so critical in helping us understand and putting it together in that way.
That's
so fascinating. We developed a booklet that explains that, where people can actually go through all six boxes to understand themselves better.
That is amazing, and when we come back on the other side of this break, I want to get into some youth work that you all do, but I may want to dig a little bit deeper on these boxes and find out how we can get a hold of this booklet. This is fast. Stay with us as we take one more break. We'll be back in about a minute and 10 seconds. Keep joining us for Breaking the Silence.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
I have gone through about two sheets of paper writing down all of this information, and I'm just thoroughly enjoying tonight's discussion with Dorothy and Stephen Haley and from Kansas, and just appreciate the work and the knowledge that was in these six boxes. I couldn't write fast enough. I'm going to listen to the program about three more times just to get all this information in. But Dorothy, you mentioned that you came up with this booklet that has all six of these boxes of this information. How can we get a hold of that booklet? Is it on your website, or what's the best way?
Yes, actually it is on our website. That's probably the best way to get it, or to just give us a call and we'll be happy to make those connections and make it available.
And that's the familypeaceinitiative.com site. Is that what it is?
That's right. That's right.
It's Family www. Yeah.
Initiative.
FamilyPeaceInitiative.com. www.FamilyPeace, P-E-A-C-E, Initiative.com. And you can get that right on that. That's awesome. Go ahead, Steve. What was you saying?
Yeah, I was just trying to give the directions on the website to the store, and people can find that material right there.
So you could use these six boxes for so many other things, just not I see how these boxes affect my life. Use this same river of cruelty model when you deal with kids?
Yes.
Okay, let's go into that with the youth work that you do, the awesome youth work that you do.
You know, actually, Greg, those six boxes are useful, I think, for every human being to understand about themselves. Because all of us, one way or another, end up wanting to illustrate ourselves in the best possible light and trying to hide those other parts of us. And the more that we get invested in hiding, the less true, the less authentic we are. So by understanding those six boxes and processing ourselves, we can become much more authentic in our interaction with our loved ones.
Yeah, and you know, when you got down to the fifth box and you was talking about the attitudes and the beliefs, it's like, whoa, that is where when you really understand who you really are, then you can jump into that sixth box of making the shift. And I love this. This is just absolutely fascinating. Tell me,
you know,
go ahead.
One of the fascinating things we have found in Batters intervention and applying it is that for the most part, previously, the work in Batters intervention has really centered on attitudes and beliefs and really trying to force people to say the right things. Mm-hmm. And what we have found is that does not necessarily indicate lasting change. The thing that creates lasting change is when people are no longer scared of themselves.
Yeah.
The problem with the violence, everybody thinks, oh, it is related to everyone's anger. And, oh, if they could only control their anger. But several points about that. First off, we know for the most part, when people are very showing a lot of anger, some of them aren't even angry at all. Some of them are using that display because it gets the other person to back down. Mm-hmm. The other thing we realize is that when people truly are puffing up, that in many ways, what they're really feeling is fear. Mm-hmm. They don't want people to get close their authentic self because it's too terrifying, because then they would have to look at their authentic self.
Yeah, and you know, that's probably the hardest thing in life to do, is to be your authentic self. And it's the most freeing thing to do once you get there. And I'm 56 years old, and I just got there the last year and a half, when I finally told the world what's happened to me. And I was a liar my whole life. I could never get around to who I really was. So I pretended to be somebody else, and it was ugly. It just wasn't ugly. Yeah. And it's just such a freeing thing to be real, and you change. Yeah.
That's exactly right. But when we're scared to be real, we will do many things. People will hurt others. People will kill others. People will kill themselves rather than be exposed.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true. Now tell me, we only have a few minutes left, but I want to jump into resiliency. And how we can build resiliency through all the traumatic events that we've experienced, and how you work that in with the youth and into the school systems, and how important that is. I know we only have a few minutes, so we're going to have to really go fast. But what's your view of resiliency and how important it is in our lives, in the life of the youth and the young people?
Yeah, Greg, that's kind of the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
We've been moving to begin to train teachers and teach teachers about the internal focused dialogue. And an essential piece of this whole river of cruelty is what we call the enlightened witness.
Enlightened witness.
The enlightened witness. And you know that in the ACEs study, one of the most important factors in resiliency is having one person who will love us unconditionally for no reason other than we are ourselves.
Oh,
yeah. Alice Miller calls that person the enlightened witness. And that enlightened witness activates what we call inside the river our golden shadow, that we are valuable, that we are loved, that we are special, that we are something. And by teaching, helping teachers, one, access their own golden shadow and understanding their own enlightened witnesses, which there's some exciting work going on in Kansas. And we do a process where we ask people who was there for them, who loved them, accepted them, who guided them. And the number one profession that shows up is teacher.
Wow.
And so teachers have a critical role in the lives of our kids. And helping teachers do their own work to be able to understand the adverse feelings and their enlightened witness and their golden shadow, then they're able in their classrooms, just in day-to-day conversations, be able to implement this internal focused dialogue and help kids to access their own value and their belief systems about themselves.
The sad thing is, if the teacher is not comfortable with being genuine and authentic, what they can do is, if there is a troubled child in their class who isn't behaving, they can zero in on them. So while teachers are amazing as enlightened witnesses, if they haven't looked at their six boxes, then what can happen is that they can be a real challenge. They can be an additional challenge for a kid who is already troubled.
Well, you know, I tell you what, we need, and this is what you're doing, and this is what I love about you guys, just at least in the state of Kansas. We need every teacher in this country to learn about this and their role and how they can become partners in this to be able to not only teach math and science, but resiliency, and that they are valuable. Every person in this world needs to understand they are a masterpiece. And teachers, like you said, are on the front lines doing that. Every teacher needs to have this in their training, or we need to get a army of people to go out and do these after school or before school sessions to be able to train them the importance of their role. This is fascinating. Wonderful. Resiliency is so important.
So one of the things we do, Greg, is we have a series of workshops.
Yes.
The first one, the Art of Facilitation. And those workshops help people go through their own boxes, explore what their triggers are, and be able to really become more authentic, have that internal dialogue.
And what's those workshops called?
But there's three of them, and they're taken in order. The first one's the Art of Facilitation. They're part of our facilitator training series. And people can find the information on our events section of our website. We have our next one coming up the end of January here in Topeka, but we also travel around North America providing these workshops for professional organizations. And we just love them. We're meeting so many amazing people. And the word that people use for these is that they're just personally transformative. And
wow.
It's really a pleasure to be a part of that.
Yeah. And the other two, one's the art of facilitation, and what's the other two?
The second one is the affective component in batter's intervention. And
okay.
The third one is mastering the family peace initiative approach. They were originally designed to train battering intervention facilitators, and it has really exploded because the river of cruelty seems to apply to every neck of the woods. And so people are just coming from, you know, all walks of life trying to figure out what is this, how does this work, and how can I plug it into the work that I'm doing?
Oh, this is fascinating. And I tell you what, I appreciate you all being on tonight and just sharing with us your wonderful wisdom. And I can't wait to get on the FamilyPeaceInitiative.com website and dig in. I may be making a trip to Topeka just to sit through these workshops. Are you ever in the Houston area? You ever have anything going on down here?
You know, it's funny that you say that. We don't have anything scheduled, but we've been in conversation over the last several months about bringing something down to Houston, and so we would never rule that out.
Well, I would like to partner up with a few people and possibly get you all to come in. Do you ever do like a 2 or 3 day thing where you go through each of these 1, 2, and 3 workshops just back to back?
Yes, we've done the first and the second one back to back. And, Greg, I have to tell you, it's an amazing experience, but people leave there emotionally exhausted because, you know, there's a lot of emotional energy that we bury beyond our cover story. And once we start tapping into that, it's an exciting adventure, but people can be very emotionally activated.
Well, I think that's what it's going to take to change what's going on in our world is for us to get emotionally activated and learn about this, and then go out and start teaching as many people as we can how to make a difference and to reach into their lives like you're doing so many people, not only in the Topeka area, but around the country. Thank you so much for being with me tonight. I'm going to have you back on so we can talk more about the youth part. I really want to get into that and how you work with the youth. But right now, we're going to have to close down. But thank you so much, Dorothy. Thank you so much, Stephen, for being with me tonight on Breaking the Silence. And God bless you, and have a Merry Christmas. I appreciate you being with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Greg. We really appreciate the opportunity.
Greg, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to more conversations.
Well, I promise you this. I want to get on the horn with you, and possibly maybe I can bring you down to the Houston area, and we can get some people involved and some organizations to be able to buddy up together and try to get that training right here in the southern part of Texas. So we would love to have that done.
That'd be exciting, Greg. We'll look forward to that conversation.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we appreciate it. And we'll be in touch with you real soon.
Very good.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. We want to just let you know before we close out tonight what we always like to share each and every week. First of all, next week will be Sioux Fork White, and you will not, I promise you, you will not want to miss that program. She is so, so awesome in the work that she's doing in Nashville. But before we close out tonight, we always want to let you know, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter what you're involved in right now, no matter what you have to face tomorrow, I promise you, there's always hope. There's always hope. Reach out to me if you need somebody to talk to on shatteredbythedarkness.com, on Instagram at shatteredbythedarkness. I would love to talk to you. I would love to give you an avenue to be able to break your own personal silence. And I can't wait to learn more about the Haleys and what they're doing with the Family Peace Initiative, and to get on that website. And just let me know what you think about the show tonight. Pass that on. We'd love to have you join us right here next week, next Sunday night, December 22nd, 8 p.m. Central, for another hour of Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. We'll talk to you next week. God bless you. Have an awesome, awesome week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.